Ron Ananian.
The exhaust manifolds on both sides, like typical GM giant mistakes. Fashion GM, the exhaust manifold bolts had popped off. The heads of the bolts popped off at the end of the manifold. The head of the bolts popped off at the front of the manifold, and he had exhaust leaks.
The car doctor.
I have an unexpected intermittent ABS engagement at random low speeds.
Under 10 miles an hour?
Yes. I have not been able to pull or check for codes yet.
I'm going to bet and say you probably won't see fault codes.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I was thinking about muscle cars this morning for some reason, and what a time period that was. And my idea of a muscle car was the period from the mid-60s, early 60s, to about the mid-70s. And by then, the muscle car era was starting to die off from what I remember, because I was there towards the tail end. I was 18 in 1975, something like that. So I'm officially old, or older. And I guess what I was thinking about was the cars that my friends drove were muscle cars, but they all had replacement engines. I don't know why I got on this subject in my head. I guess I was watching either Barrett Jackson or Meekum, somebody, and they were talking about this has an original engine and that has an. You know what? I don't think half these muscle cars have original engines anymore, because everybody blew them up because they were hot rods. They were high-performance vehicles out on the road. It was a crazy time. I remember my brother had a 65 GTO. And he bought it in 1973. Yeah, 73, Harry got the GTO. But it had a 400 Ram Air motor out of a 68 GTO in it. And that was typical. That was so typical of what went on. Someone else had a 65 Chevelle, a big block Chevelle, but it had a 327 in it. A 283 in it, because the big block was blown up. And it just seemed like a repetitive thing back in the day that if you owned a muscle car, it might have been a badge of honor or something. It was a societal thing. But it was a great time because you purchased this car with a busted engine or a blown engine, and you spent Saturday afternoon with your buddies trying to swing the engine out and put the new engine in, and engines were a dime a dozen, and it was just a simpler time. And there was camaraderie, there was hanging out, there was a great learning curve that went on. And it didn't involve being hunched over, walking down the street, pushing buttons while you were on your phone. It was just a different time frame. And I guess I say this because I think of this, because I think of the societal impact of the automobile and the changes that it has brought and the changes it will continue to bring and how we will approach it. Hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with learning something new. I'll tell you a few funny story before we open the garage doors today. So I had this, and I think I'm a pretty competent mechanic. I'm pretty fair at what I do. I had this 2011 Honda CR-V this week that the air conditioning didn't work. And first-time customer, Sarah brought it in, young girl. I probably one of, probably in her mid-20s. And the air conditioning didn't work. So I diagnosed it. And diagnosing air conditioning is a strange phenomenon. You never know where to start the diagnosis or what to tell the customer to expect for a diagnostic charge, because it's all different. Is it low on refrigerant? Is it an electrical problem? Is the belt falling off? Is it mechanical? Did something break? Is it a blend door problem inside the car? Is the water valve stuck open and it's superheating the evaporator core, and that's why the air won't get cold coming out of the duct? Where do you start? So make a long story short, I diagnosed it. It had a bad AC compressor. Put an AC compressor on, got approval. I went through the whole drill, talked to Sarah, talked to her stepdad, got the whole thing resolved and put a compressor on it. And it was all good. A little bit of a funny how do things happen kind of a scenario. The blower motor was real noisy on this Honda, and it just didn't sound right. It just had this vibrational, like you knew something was, it sounded like something out of Star Trek was trying to lighten up the warp drive engines. And I said, I've got to pull the blower motor. I've got to see what's going on because I can't give you back cold air conditioning now, and you're going to use it so much. There's something, man, you ought to see how many acorns were inside this blower motor. Holy smokes. It was just, if acorns were a nickel a pound, I'd be retired. You wouldn't be listening to me today. So, you know, I cleaned out all the acorns, shook it upside down, kind of kicked around the ducts, got as many acorns out of the ducts. And I thought about it and I said, how could the acorns, I don't know how we got on this subject, but we'll continue to go with this. I'm talking this one off the top of my head. I'm just telling you the week. I said, how could the acorns get inside the blower motor? It's sort of impossible. Gee, I wonder what the cabin filter looks like because that sits right on top of the blower motor. Well, I know where the acorns came from. All right. And what happened was there was some kind of a nest being built on top of the cabin filter. I'm guessing a little mouse. Mickey and Minnie were in there on a honeymoon and because they were gnawing at the filter. They were kind of chewing it up. And they packed all these acorns in. And I'm guessing somebody either changed the cabin filter and acorns fell in or because there was no hole all the way through. But somehow the acorns got around the cabin filter and all collected inside the blower motor. Or Minnie or Mickey walked through the heater ducts under the dashboard and found a way to the blower motor vis-a-vis without having to go through the filter. And that's where all the acorns were being stored. But the funny part, and this is why I started talking about Sarah and the Honda, was when she came to pay. Ron learned something this week. All right. Sarah said, do you take Apple Pay? And I went, I don't even know what Apple Pay is. Otherwise, other than assuming it's something with your iPhone, she goes, yeah, she goes, it's Apple Pay. Do you take Apple Pay? Gee, I don't know. I looked at my credit card terminal. I said, it's got all these little symbols on it. And I recognized Google and I went, oh, wait, is this Apple Pay? It has the Apple symbol. She says, yeah. She said, watch this. She walks over with her phone. Boop. We're all paid. That was it. I never saw anything like it. I thought that was the greatest thing, you know, new technology. I said, how does that work? She says, well, I'm telling you, you want to understand, you want to learn something new, just talk to a young person because, you know, there's a lot they've learned walking down the streets of America, holding their heads down, pushing buttons. You know, they've picked up an awful lot. Yes, Tom. Tom, you have a comment? I can see a thought forming.
Yeah, no. I was just going to say, you were talking about the acorns before. I've got to send you a link to this. There's a link to, it was a tower crew that went up a tower. And you've seen those big microwave dishes that look like drums on the towers.
Yeah.
Well, this one had to be 10 feet. And there was no microwave signal. So they have to open the thing up and see what's going on. And they start pulling this cover off because it's just like a drum. They start pulling the cover off. Ron, this thing was full of acorns.
Well, you know, critters and components, Tom, critters and cars, you look at what they can do and how they can do it. Hey, I just thought of a question I could ask you. It's not car related, but I'm going to ask you here because you talk about towers and high tension lines and things like that. You ever look at high tension lines and every couple of feet, they have those white plastic triangles. Have you ever noticed that?
No.
Or there's balls. There's a ball.
Oh. Yeah, well, what the balls are, and the triangles may be similar, what the balls are, that is to make the lines visible to low-flying aircraft.
Tom, some of the lines I've seen are so low to the ground, if the airplane saw that, I think the plane's crashing anyway. I think it's over.
You know that. I know that. But that's what the regulations are.
You know, 10 feet off the ground, trust me, if that plane's 10 feet off the ground...
He's taking off if he is.
Yeah,
or he's landing.
Off. And he's definitely
really hard.
He's definitely in the wrong place, or he's landing for a reason. I always thought, well, what do I know? So let me pull over and take a pause. But Apple Pay, Tom, I now take Apple Pay. I'm high tech. So Sarah got a kick out of it though.
Should I be impressed and like start bowing or something?
Well,
or?
No. Hey, Tom, did you ever hear of Apple Pay?
Yeah,
I never.
I got kids.
I've heard of Google Pay. I knew what Google Pay was, but it's what's next, right? So now if they can solve the electric car problem and the lithium battery charging problem and all the other things that are going on, but we sure can pay for it real quick and easy. 855-560-9900. I'll be back to open the garage doors right after this.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a
Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's get over and talk to Ray in Pennsylvania, 12 Toyota Tacoma. Ray, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, Ron, thank you. Blessings to you and yours, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Listen, this is the second time I've had this happen to me. I had a 2008 Tundra, and the wiring harness in the steering column went out. And now in my 2012 Tacoma, it's gone out again. And I'm thinking I've been fortunate enough to have it go out twice on me, there might be enough going out that they might be after marketing this part. But the Toyota dealership wants $350 for the part plus $200 to put it on. That's a $550 bill. And I'm wondering if there's somewhere out there that I can buy that new wiring harness that goes down through the steering column aftermarket. It operates like the horn and cruise control and stuff like that.
I think you're talking about the clock spring, aren't you, Ray?
I don't know. I'm not an auto guy like all you guys on this show. But I just want to get the part and give it to my mechanic.
Okay, so you're. Let me ask you this question: is the airbag light on? Any dashboard lights on in the vehicle?
I don't think so.
Okay, but so what's actually wrong with the truck right now? The horn doesn't work.
The horn won't blow. The cruise control won't go on. And the dealership says it's this some kind of wiring harness in the steering column that needs replaced. And it's the same thing that happened to me in my 2008 Tundra.
Okay. So how many miles are on your this Tacoma?
About 300.
300,000?
Yeah.
All right. So I think what you're talking about is the clock spring. An airbag clock spring is the first line of connection between steering wheel controls and the rest of the vehicle. Just like the name implies, it's called a clock spring or a spiral cable because it allows clock spring, same thing. It allows the steering wheel to turn and rotate and still maintain connection. All right. Now, you can go out to O'ReillyAuto.com. I know they've got a variety of spiral cables out there for that 12 Tacoma from different manufacturers. You can call O'Reilly Auto Parts, tell them what you're looking for. Hey, what have you had success with? What's got the best success rate? But I've got to tell you, at 300,000 miles, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect a clock spring or anything else in this vehicle to break. All right, just saying what it is. You know, at 300 grand, I'd be thrilled if all I had to do was put in this vehicle was a clock spring.
They're great vehicles. The last one I had almost 400,000 on it.
Right.
I love Toyota trucks.
You know, Toyota makes a good product. What goes wrong with Toyotas, people ask me. The exhaust systems rot at the flanges, not the pipes, the flanges. They get what I call the Toyota crunchies because Toyota makes the systems out of stainless, but the flanges out of regular steel. Sooner or later, they rot. We tend to paint them for customers or try to. We've started recently in the last couple of years. We can't keep up with them, but it does slow down the process. They go through charcoal canisters. They set EVAP codes. They'll set CAT codes and air fuels. But you know what? If you do the maintenance, you do the fluids. You'll never put an engine in a Toyota, and the transes last a good long time. The engines last a real good long time, provided you do the maintenance to them. So
is $350 for this part sound reasonable?
Only it does in my mind, but I don't think you're going to be satisfied until you find out what it is in the aftermarket. And if the aftermarket is $300, then you know for the $50, I'd probably buy the OE Toyota part because you got 300,000 out of this, and it's not just the price of the part; it's the reliability of the part and the ability to have to take it in and out. It's the labor to replace it that gets to be expensive too. So, but do this: go out to O'ReillyAuto.com. It's real simple and easy. You can look up the part yourself. Just click on Add Vehicle. All right, tell it it's a 2012 Toyota Tacoma with whatever engine you have. Tell them you're looking for a spiral cable. I know they've got more than a few different manufacturers out there. You can find your manufacturer, pick which one you like, and then if you have any other questions, you can call them direct and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for, or maybe you have a local O'Reilly Auto Parts by you in PA, and go from there. At least you know what the Toyota dealer's charging. Now you can find out what it's going to cost from O'Reilly Auto Parts and go from there. All right, kiddo?
God bless.
Thank you. You be well. Important. It's important to compare and look. You know, competition is what made the American auto industry what it is in a lot of ways, some good, some bad. I saw some paperwork came across my desk just this morning. Research Kathy is hard at work finding information. And I should, you know, I have to give a little plug here for Research Kathy and Radio Tom and Radio Josh and all the people that are behind the scenes to keep me up here on air so that we can talk each and every week, because they do a heck of a job. And they kind of sit, you know, behind the scenes and behind the stage and stick me out front. And, you know, I wouldn't be here without them. But Radio Kathy just sent me something that talked about, and I think it was Radio Tom sent it to me too. Research Kathy and Radio Tom. I got to get my nomenclature's right. I tend to do that with people. I don't know why I pigeonhole everybody by what they do. It's Radio Tom. It's Research Kathy. It's either Shelby Jimmy or Computer Jimmy. I've got a really weird eclectic list of friends that you know, I work with and that I spend time with. But in any event, that talk about how in the latest infrastructure bill the government is putting forth, there's conversation in there about the Right to Repair Act. And that they're mandating right to repair to allow the small shop, to allow farmers to repair their equipment, to allow people to repair their own cell phones, that they need access to information, how important it is. And listen, that's really a good thing. It creates competition. I understand that, you know, the manufacturer's arguments about proprietary information and how certain things shouldn't be let out into the automotive aftermarket or into whatever aftermarket company or product we're talking about. You know, I think about every time I connect to a Chrysler lately, I think about that episode back in 2015, I believe it was, where the two guys hacked a brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee. They broke into it and they took control of the vehicle while the person was driving it on a test track to prove the point. And it's because of that incident that now with a Chrysler, when you scan a Chrysler as a repair shop, I believe it started in model year 2017, you have to, it's a yearly fee for an independent shop, it's $50 a year, log into AutoAuth, A-U-T-H, AutoAuth.com, register all your tools, register who you are, so that you now can talk to a Chrysler. It goes up to the cloud, it comes back down, it goes to the car. It's a two or three step process, depending on your perspective. But the reason they're doing that is to prevent hacking, prevent things like that from becoming an issue. So it's just that important. It's really, auto repair is changing. If you wait 5 seconds, it'll change completely all over again. So I see it every day in the shop. Hey, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Come on back. We're going to pull over and take a pause. We'll talk some more. We've got some calls. And I've got to tell you, I got a great J.B. Weld story that's all coming up after this pause. I'm Ron Ananian. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's go over to Fred. Is that Fred in Massachusetts or Maine? I'm not sure which it is. M.A. Tom, you have to be more specific. 86 Chevy, I know that. So, Fred, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
Thank you for taking my call, Ron. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. What's going on?
I got this Quadrajet I bought, and it doesn't have a secondary lockout lever on it. I was wondering if I need that or not.
Well, that's there, you know, that's there to prevent or to help promote proper choke and secondary operation during warm-up. So I would. I mean, you can find them. They're out there. There's a couple of different places. We've had some success at the shop when we need, you know, parts, a place called, let me think, it's up in Michigan, Quadrajet Power. I think it's quadrajetpower.com. But, you know, I'm sure there's other places that, you know, you want that you can just purchase linkage or individual pieces or parts. And, you know, the sad part is, Fred, you know how many of those carburetors we all threw away back in the day because we didn't think anything
of it? Yeah, I know.
You know.
I threw a bunch of them away.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was
yeah,
just.
Yeah, I bought this carburetor and the guy's like, you don't need it. I'm like, well, why did they make it with it then?
Right. Yeah, it's no, it's there for a reason. I would try to put it back on. And frankly, if you're going to use this carburetor and, you know, on a vehicle to make it run, I would, you know, I'll rebuild a carb. I'll say it like this. I can rebuild a carburetor, all right? I can't remanufacture a carburetor. I don't have the proper tooling. I don't have the skill set, and I don't have the time or the patience. All right, and the difference is I can replace gaskets, I can clean, I can set float level, I can do all the basic preliminary adjustments. I can't repair the throttle bore. I can't measure it to see does it need to be repaired. You know, there's just some remanufacturing componentry that, you know, on a 40-year-old piece of equipment that's got to be done. So you may want to consider just sending the whole carb out to somebody, tell them, hey, listen, rebuild it, replace the missing pieces. They will flow test it. If they're a decent rebuilder, they'll actually run liquid through it like a, you know, with a similar viscosity and density to gasoline. So they'll see how everything actually operates and under, you know, as live conditions as they can possibly make without putting it on the vehicle. And it's worth the extra money. I've done it a few times. It comes back and you bolt them on. They usually idle right where they're supposed to. Boom. Play with the mixture screws a little bit. You're good to go. You're done. It's worth the money you'll spend. Because this carburetor that you bought from this guy, did he rebuild the carburetor?
Yeah, I bought it from a peso. I bought it from a rebuilder. That's the thing that makes me aggravated.
Boy, and that's kind of scary. And these are the guys that are telling you, yeah, you don't need that part.
Yeah. National carburetor.
Yeah. So. You know, I would want to know exactly what the linkage is that you're missing does. I believe it prevents choke. It prevents secondary operation during choke so that the vehicle is properly warmed up. If GM wanted
it.
Idle, right? Right. Here we go. We're going to have to reinvent it. Why would we want to reinvent the component? It's hard enough just making things run properly when you've got all the pieces. Now we're going to try to second guess what the engineers were thinking when we don't have all the pieces. You know, this is part of my anti-stupid campaign. All right, because now these same guys are going to be working on electric vehicles someday, and you wonder how they're going to, we don't need this computer module. It's not necessary. It was just an extra. Look at all the other ones you have. Find somebody reputable. Let them go through the carburetor, because at that point, if they're thinking like that, I don't know that I would trust them to go through the vehicle, to go through the carburetor, and you know, that what they're going to do is going to work, you know, as far as a product and do what it's supposed to do. So I would definitely let someone else go through it, rebuild it, flow it, you know, all that kind of good stuff, and make that work. All right, kiddo? You're very welcome. You take good care. Speaking of carburetors, I got a couple of emails. Remember last week we were talking with the gentleman with the Corvette and the float, we were talking about how the carburetor was always flooding out. And I should point this out. You know, I did a dangerous thing last week or the week before. I think it was the week before, 2 weeks ago on air on the July 4th show, where I made the assumption, dangerous word, assume, that the caller had checked the float to make sure the float wasn't punctured. All right, but I received a few emails on this. Hey, Ron, could a pinhole in the float be keeping the needle and seat open? Plastic float saturated, brass float with a hole in it. Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize to everybody, and I want to do it up here and say, you know what? I never considered that, because I'm thinking that if you rebuilt it, you were smart enough. If you're smart enough to rebuild it, you should be smart enough to feel the fuel in the bowl. But, you know, then again, never assume, right? Never believe that everybody went through and did everything they were supposed to do. So that could also be an issue where the floats are saturated and not doing what they're supposed to do. Real quick, before we take the pause, Kathy sent us an article talking about the race to crack battery recycling before it's too late. I was reading this. It's kind of scary. Every day, millions of lithium-ion batteries roll off the line at Tesla's Gigafactory in Sparks, Nevada. By the way, I think Sparks, Nevada is the place where they found that flower on top of the lithium deposits that they're not allowed to cultivate because they're going to ruin the flower, which is an endangered species now, and blah, blah, blah. That is what the article is about. The cells produced there on-site or by Panasonic are destined to be bundled together by the thousands in battery packs of new Teslas, the article continues. But not all batteries are cut out for life on the road. Panasonic ships truckloads of cells that don't pass the qualification test to a facility in Carson City. This is the home of Redwood Materials, a small company founded in 2017 with an ambition to become the anti-gigafactory, a place where batteries are cooked down into raw materials that will serve as the grist for new cells. This is where it gets interesting. Okay, so Tesla's producing all these lithium-ion batteries, and basically what the article is saying is some batteries don't meet spec. They're not made, they don't meet the standard. It then goes on, Redwood is part of a new wave of startups racing to solve a problem that doesn't exist yet. How to recycle the mountains of batteries from electric vehicles that are past their prime. Over the past decade, the world's lithium-ion production capacity has increased tenfold to meet the growing demand for electric vehicles. Now vehicles from that first production wave are just beginning to reach the end of their lifespan. I think electric vehicle lifespan is a lot shorter than 10 years. I think it's 5. And, you know, you got to think about computer software and computer modules and how often things are going to have to be updated. How often is your laptop updated before you throw it out? This marks the beginning of a tsunami of spent batteries, which will only get worse as more electric cars hit the road. The International Agency predicts an 800% increase in the number of electric vehicles over the next decade, each car packed with thousands of cells. The dirty secret of the electric vehicle revolution is that it has created an electric waste time bomb, and cracking lithium-ion recycling is the only way to defuse it. And then the article goes on to talk about how they're trying this and they're trying that. But this to me was that this is the meat and potatoes. Okay, there are two ways to deactivate lithium-ion batteries. The most common technique, called pyrometallurgy, involves burning them to remove unwanted organic material and plastics. This method leaves the recycler with just a fraction of the original material, typically just the copper and nickel or cobalt from the cathode. A common pyro method called smelting use a furnace powered with fossil fuels, which isn't great for the environment. So wait a minute. We're going to use fossil fuels to generate the electricity to charge the vehicle. We're going to use fossil fuels to smelt the battery down, to separate it, to reuse it and safely recycle it. All this in the name of having electric vehicles. Where does the clean air part come in? I still don't understand this. Part of the anti-stupid campaign. Is it me? I don't know. 855-560-9900. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Send me a line, ronacardoctorshow.com, or give us a call, 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to Frank in Texas, 07 Toyota. Frank, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
Hi, I just recently, first of all, in your opinion, what do you think about the Toyota FJ? I just bought a 2007. They're hard to find. I purchased it from a Toyota dealer, but do you recommend that I change all the oils on the differential, transfer case, and even the transmission?
How many miles are on it, Frank?
188,000.
Yeah, I do. I listen. If you look up, and I'm gonna say that that vehicle probably is driven under severe operating conditions. Most vehicles, mm-hmm. in my mind, if you read the parameters by what a manufacturer calls severe, most vehicles operate in the United States under severe conditions. That being said, Toyota, if you look in the service guide, I know on that particular vehicle, they call for axle fluids in the 50 to 60,000 mile range. If there's a transfer case, you know, diff, transfer case, trans fluid, you know, it should all be done. I liked one of the practices I've done over the years whenever I buy a used vehicle is that if I buy something used, if it's wet, I change it. Brake, trans, diff, transfer case. You know, in a lot of cases, I won't always do power steering fluid depending upon mileage, but in a lot of cases, I will. You know, at least then I know where I'm starting out. And then to put the vehicle on a regular scheduled diet of fluid maintenance, and I think you'll do really well. Those are great vehicles. I think that the reason they're so hard to find is they weren't produced in such big numbers as everything else, because the public didn't seem to react to them all that well, whether it was a look thing or the way they fit everybody's lifestyle, I don't know, but they were made really well. They were made really well. They tend to last. I see very few issues with those vehicles. Anything out of the normal, you know, to me, they're like normal Toyota vehicles. They run well. They last a long time. little bit of maintenance, a little nip and tuck here and there, you should do well.
Great, great. So I'll go ahead and take your advice and do that. I got a feeling I overpaid a little bit, but I really wanted one. And when I started looking at prices, I don't think I overpaid by that much. But
you know,
it was still $20K.
Yeah, listen.
$20K for a 14-year-old vehicle.
But you know what? It's right now finding a decent vehicle is a hard gig. And you know, think of it like this. What do you think you should have paid? Instead of paying 20, would a 15 have made it? You know, do you think that vehicle was 20? Do you think it was 16?
Between 16 and 17 would have been okay. Really what I thought would have been fair.
Think of it this way. Is it a clean vehicle? Is it in good shape?
Extremely clean.
You know what? That $3,000 was a buyer's premium. All right, for $3,000 you got peace of mind, you got the vehicle you want. Price always, or condition always dictates price, and demand always dictates condition and price. You know, it's a three-part cycle. Depending upon the market, depending upon condition, will always dictate what you pay for something and, you know, what exactly it is that you get. I'd rather pay a little bit more for a better vehicle than have to try and go through and rebuild and repair, because the consequences of somebody not taking care of a vehicle are very long-standing and deep-reaching. I remember years ago we purchased a 94 Chevy Caprice wagon used. It was a couple of years old with 30,000 miles on it. We went for a road test. It was about an hour's ride to the dealer located in Central Jersey. And after 5 minutes on the highway, I turned to my wife and I said, "We're going to take it." And she said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "It's got enough mileage on it that all they had to do was 5 oil changes. And the oil's clean, and I see stickers, and I see maintenance records. I'm not worried about the rest of the fluids. I'm not worried about the rest of the condition. I'll fix whatever's there." But the long-term damage wasn't done. The vehicle got oil changes. The vehicle got some level of maintenance. If that 14-year-old vehicle that you just paid $20,000 for was well-maintained, think of all the things you won't have to repair because somebody did proper maintenance and maybe a little bit above and beyond. Right? Makes sense?
Makes sense. You make me feel a lot better about it now.
Yeah, so,
you put it that way.
You know.
So, listen, thanks for great advice. Great advice, and I am going to take it and get it all the oils changed. I think that's a great call up. Thank you so much for your help.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you, and enjoy every minute of that vehicle. Be well, my friend.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. I can't tell you enough. Getting the right vehicle, folks, is getting a good used vehicle. It's a wonderful feeling, and you save a few bucks in the process. Don't worry about your pay. Worry about what you get. What you get is more important, and you get what you pay for. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. You know, I promised you a JB Weld story. It happened this week in the shop, and I was thinking also that maybe this will be the future of auto repair, right? And you'll understand why in a minute. So we use Milwaukee power tools in the shop, the Milwaukee cordless stuff. And the lithium batteries are kind of heavy. And it's interesting the way Milwaukee designed the battery cases for the cordless impact guns, in that the bigger batteries, the 18-volt batteries, there's only two little screws in each corner. There is a screw in each corner, two in each end, that hold the two battery clamshell halves together. Well, I guess over time, the weight of the battery causes the screw to break the plastic housing that it's bound into. Batteries aren't cheap. The batteries are, you know, $75-$80 bucks a piece, and there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that the screws have broken the housing. I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, you know, how do I want to repair this and still keep it professional looking? You know what? I went out to jbweld.com and I looked up. They have the ability, you can look up your project. And I looked up my project. I said it was plastic and PVC, and they came up with some of the JB Weld adhesives and epoxies. And I used that, and I actually repaired the batteries. And there's nothing wrong with them. They're only a couple of years old, and I'm going to get longer life out of them. And shame on Milwaukee. You guys should have put more material in the clamshell halves. But that isn't even the point of it. And you can find more information at jbweld.com. That isn't even the point of it. I'm saying to myself, is this going to be the future of auto repair? Am I going to be epoxying and adhesiving things back together when the electric cars break? Hey, my electric car broke, really? Oh, let me fix the battery. Let me get out my tube of JB Weld and put the car back together. I don't know. Do you think it could happen? It could be interesting. We'll see where it goes. And let me say this, too. You know, we've talked a lot about electric vehicles, you and I, over the past couple of months. I want your input. You know, as I said before, I sat at dinner with my friend Tony this week, and I listened to what he had to say because he's a listener, too. He listens to the show. All of you are listeners. This isn't my radio show. It's our radio show. I want your thoughts. I want your feelings. What do you think? Send me a line. Send me a note. Ron@cardoctorshow.com. Let me know what you're thinking. If you want to hear us talk about something, send us that as well. We want to hear from you. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.